Now back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Could be a busy day for Commander Chuck with the weather. You know what that does? It causes chaos, and we're looking at thunderstorms today. Rain later this morning, then in the afternoon. It'll get stronger. Thunderstorms are possible, and then into the evening. We're looking at a high today of 64, winds 25 to 35 miles per hour. There is, however, only a marginal risk of severe weather. Then tomorrow, things will clear up. We'll have a partly sunny day, 60 for a high, and then the temperatures will start to rise as we progress through the week, into the weekend. Monday, the early forecast, 1 week from today, 80 degrees, the big 8-0. We are in the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, where family and fun come together. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Zach Boyd with you. And as promised, time to talk with our good friend Jonah Dillon. He covers the Tigers. He covers the Grizzlies and other things for the Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter at the Jonah Dillon. He joins us now on Sports 56 Mornings. Hey, Jonah.
Hey, how you guys doing?
So Jonah covered the NCAA tournament, as did probably every member of the media in this city. What time did you get out of the building last night?
It was about, I want to say, 12:30 or 12:45 a.m. Obviously, the overtime game, it was awesome. It was great to be there, but it did extend our night quite a bit. And then, obviously, there were so many storylines coming out of it. So it was a good way to finish the weekend, obviously, because the start on Friday, in terms of, you know, big moments, was not great with all those blowout games.
Right. We talked about it to start the show, the four blowouts on Friday, although great contingent from Nebraska. A lot of fans were there. Then Sunday, maybe not as many, as you eliminate four teams and there's only four left. But we had a thriller in the night game going overtime. The Baylor-Clemson game ended up being pretty close in the end after Clemson had dominated for the most part. But overall, what did you think of the event, how Memphis staged it, the fans, the spectators that were here in Memphis, just your overall viewpoint?
Yeah, I thought it went well. I think it comes down to, you kind of get lucky or unlucky if you're one of these sites with, A, you know, which teams are coming and how well they travel, and then B, if you get one of those storylines, like you think about like Oakland beating Kentucky, right? If something like that happened here, there would have been a ton of interest. Like you said, Nebraska, that game when Nebraska played Texas A&M on Friday, there was more energy in FedEx Forum than there was the rest of the weekend, and that's just because of how many Nebraska fans traveled. So if they'd won and they'd come back and played again on yesterday against Houston, I think there would have been a lot of fans. Maybe even more people would have come. So, yeah, it definitely felt like it was a little more muted, but it just comes down to, you know, which fan base you get. And Nebraska was the only one that was kind of going to travel a ton with where the game was and how many fans they had. But I thought the atmosphere for the A&M Houston game, you know, by the end, everybody who was there was engaged in it. I think there were definitely more A&M fans than Houston fans. And obviously, as they were making that comeback in the last couple of minutes, it was a pretty good atmosphere in that FedEx Forum. And yeah, it was a cool weekend. I mean, it was a long 4 days. It was pretty busy, obviously, for us. and those days were, you know, we got pressers on Thursday and Saturday, and then obviously the games on Friday and Sunday. And it was a lot, but it was a cool experience. And I thought, you know, we saved the best for last, so that was cool that we got to have that game. And by the end, I think it was pretty, you know, there was another game, but it was a blowout. So that was the game that everyone was watching, and obviously you could see a buzzer beater, so can't complain about that.
Did you have to do any Johnny Manziel stalking?
I did not. Some of my colleagues did. I got lucky on that one, trying to figure out where he was. I don't think he was there yesterday, but the other day, luckily he was right behind where that media section was. Down by the floor, so it wasn't that hard to go get him. I was trying to go. Jim Nance was there yesterday.
Yes, he was
for the Houston game. But he was sitting on a part of the arena where it was really hard for us to get to because he had to go around kind of where the band was. And so trying to get over to get a photo of him was a lot more difficult, believe it or not, than getting Johnny Manziel. Although he did actually, Jim Nance did just walk into the Houston locker room after the game, and I wasn't in there, but he just started kind of holding court with reporters, I guess, in the locker room, kind of as the players were holding court, you know, doing their interviews. Jim Nance kind of posted up there and a bunch of reporters obviously wanted to talk to him. So I think that was a cool moment too.
Yeah, it just seems strange.
Did he just start doing a Capital One commercial?
There was opportunity there.
He walked in and he said, "Hello, friends," to all the media members. But it's weird not having him call games for the NCAA tournament and actually being in Memphis for the first couple of rounds, you know, seeing him for the game on Sunday, obviously, but to be there in the middle of the Cougs fans, it was just strange. But for those who don't know, he's obviously a Houston alum and a big supporter of all things Cougars. We're talking with Jonah Dillon, who covers the Tigers, the Grizzlies, and other things for the Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter at the Jonah Dillon. Obviously, he didn't have a chance to walk around and ask everybody that was there over the course of the weekend, but could you get a feel on whether or not there was a nice contingent of local people that were there just to watch good basketball?
I think it was pretty solid. There were definitely, you know, you walk around the concourse, there were people wearing Tigers gear. And obviously there were people wearing all sorts of, you know, college basketball gear. But I think there definitely were, especially like the early slate on Friday. That was before the Nebraska game. So there were still a good amount of people there. Not the other schools obviously didn't travel, but it wasn't to the same extent. So it definitely seemed like there were. And then, you know, you get those people kind of on board. For example, last night with A&M and Underdog, obviously, you know, they kind of get on board with whoever the Underdog is if it's a close game at the end. I think there was. I mean, you know, not every seat was filled in the arena, but it was a pretty good crowd for all the games. And I think a lot of people ended up deciding to go.
That was the thing that's not being like walking around, the amount of jerseys or team gear of teams mm-hmm. that weren't here, that were playing elsewhere in
right,
the tournament.
Right.
So I assume that's local people who are fans of those teams but didn't travel to go to those games. I was like walking around, like, why am I seeing all of these different teams here? I'm seeing the NC State and all this stuff. And I'm like, this is very bizarre.
Yeah, I was thinking I should make a list of all the like teams' jerseys that I saw. I mean, Duke fans sitting there cheering during the games. There was somebody in the Baylor section yesterday with a Kansas shirt on. I don't really know how that happened.
Maybe lost a bet.
There was a Ryan Archie Diacono jersey, which was my favorite one. I
saw football jerseys. I saw a hockey jersey. I mean, you know, people are sports fans. They want to wear whatever is comfortable.
Yeah, look, if you've had thinking you go to the game. It's just funny. It was, I guess it's like, you know, I'm a college sports fan. I want to rep my team, and it's March Madness. You know, maybe they were playing at the same time somewhere else, but mm-hmm. Yeah, there were definitely some strange ones.
Shout out to Scott Burns, the SID at the University of Memphis, and the entire Memphis staff, and also all the folks with the Grizzlies as they combined to put on the show. And I think they did a really good job. We never hear from the NCAA. They probably do as far as the input on the job they've done. We do know this, and we were talking about this earlier, Jonah, that it's unfortunate that a bid was not made for anything before 2029 to host a regional or even the first two rounds again. So it's going to be a while before Memphis gets that opportunity to do it again.
Yeah. And you know, it was, like you said, I think it was a lot of extra work. You know, that's straight extra work for all the staff with the Tigers who had to put all that stuff together. And as they said, their thank you is they got that Tigers logo on the side of the court. So if anyone was watching the games and you saw that, that was the official thank you to all those people. Like you said, shout out to Scott Burns. Obviously did a great job helping out that weekend. And it's a lot. I mean, you know, running around there the whole time, you know, Friday and Thursday, there's 8 different press conferences. The locker rooms are open for a certain amount of time. You have to be very specific about who's on the court with open practice at what time, who's at the press conference, which players come into the press conference. You know, which media member, you've got local media, you've got national media, you've got team-specific media. It's a crazy production, and I thought it went off pretty well. So, it was definitely a fun weekend to be a part of.
Yeah, logistically, like, I don't even understand how they do it, quite frankly, knowing where everybody's supposed to be at what times and everything else. It's amazing to me.
But we're a city that's known for logistics, so shout out to those guys for getting it all correct and really doing a great job. All right, so now back to your main gig of many gigs that you have, many hats that you wear, and that's Memphis football. As spring football is underway, the Tigers, I believe, have had 3 practices. Is that correct?
Yeah, it just started last last Tuesday was officially the first day.
Okay, so three on their way to 15 in the spring game, which will be a Saturday afternoon, not Friday night stripes as they've had in the past. Before we talk about spring and the Tigers, well, this is about the Tigers, but not about necessarily this year's team or next season's team. Pro Day is Thursday. So guys who played for the University of Memphis and maybe even some others that are sprinkled in will be performing in front of scouts on Thursday. Who will be the showstopper in your opinion? And do you have any idea of how many scouts are expected, how many teams will be represented?
Yeah, not sure on that yet. Hopefully I'll get that figured out in the next couple of days. I think obviously Blake Watson among the Tigers players from last year is going to be the guy that everyone's going to be watching, and it feels like it could be important. He's a guy who, if he were to run a pretty good 40 time and look good on those drills, he could, you know, shoot up draft boards. He's gotten a lot of buzz for somebody who's, you know, expected to be picked towards the end of the draft or maybe be an undrafted free agent throughout the process so far with the All-Star games that he was a part of, kind of popped in both of those games. And obviously we know about how productive he was as a college running back, his ability to catch passes out of the backfield as a former receiver. And I think he's a guy who, you know, someone is going to pick him up late and he's going to be one of those sleeper, hey, if this guy makes the roster, he can really help this team out type of players. It's just a question of how far up the draft board he's able to go. And I think Thursday will be important for him. There's a lot of other players, Tigers players that people will obviously recognize, you know, Jacob Blake, Jalen Allen, Joe Skate, Jeff Kanarku, guys like that, Simeon Blair. There's a pretty good list of guys who are in the mix that we should expect to see. And yeah, part of it is we have these pro day experiences and like, you never know who's going to be there. There's always going to be scouts there. They're going to be watching. It doesn't matter who they're there to watch. They're probably going to be watching every person who's there. And if you do something that looks different than what they've seen on tape, or you do something that stands out to them, you know, they know exactly what to look for and they know what to see from guys who they aren't necessarily watching for. You know, they know, hey, if this guy does this, I should probably put him on my list. And so it's a big opportunity for those guys, and it'll be cool to see them back because obviously, you know, there were a lot of guys, when you look at the new roster, you look at last year, there were a lot of guys who played really key roles who have obviously moved on.
Other than Watson, do any of the other guys have a chance to be drafted, you think?
I would say at this point, no. I mean, that goes back to if you – you know, guys can come out of nowhere in this process. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance. It's not like anybody, you know, no one was at the combine. Nobody else was in those All-Star games that Blake Watson was in. And so this is a big moment, I think. That's the thing. You think a pro day sometimes is like very monotone and guys are doing the same drills that you've seen them do before, especially if they're big-time prospects. Sometimes guys, you know, they don't do specific drills. But if you are somebody who's kind of on the fringes, it is an opportunity and it is a huge moment because you know these people are going to be there. You know you're going to have an opportunity because, you know, it's your college and it's the same. It's very familiar to you. It'll be in the Tigers facility where they've obviously practiced. And so, yeah, I would say going into it, no, but it's possible that, you know, on Friday we'll say, hey, somebody did something and now they're actually getting some butt.
All right, for the team for 2024 with spring football underway, what's the one or two most important storylines?
Yeah, for me, it's the offensive line. I mean, we talked about some of the guys there. Jacob Blakes obviously was a program stalwart at center. And going back and kind of looking back at last season, the offensive line played well. And we know that because we didn't spend that much time talking about it, which
correct.
Is usually how it works, right, with the offensive line. If you spend all the time talking about why is this happening, it means that there was a problem. We should probably think about that. I'm trying to think about that going into next season, you know. If we're not talking about the offensive line, we should actively say, hey, you know, these guys are actually doing a pretty good job. But they've lost three starters. They brought in a lot of guys. If you look at the transfer portal and who's come, there's offensive linemen throughout. A lot of different players, a lot of different options for pretty much every spot because there's a lot of guys who can move throughout the offensive line. So it's hard to even say right now, you know, who's going to play which position. We know that Xavier Hill is going to be involved somehow, but they want to move him inside. He ended up playing right tackle and left tackle for most of last season. Jonah Gamble will probably be a starter too. We don't know what position he's going to play. He might play center. He might play guard again. And then they've got transfers from all over the place trying to fill the rest of the spots. So that's one I would say. And then the revamped defense, obviously a new defensive coordinator, Jordan Haken, and I'm interested to see what it looks like. Right now, he's had a lot of time to figure out what system he wants to play, what things should look like. We know that he was the interim coordinator, obviously, for the Liberty Bowl, and he made a lot of changes, even though he only had about 3 weeks to do it. So now he's got all this time. He's got a whole offseason to put in the system that he wants. He's been able to get some new players in to figure out how he wants to mold those guys. And so we'll see how he looks at his personnel and decides how he wants to play as we head towards the rest of spring practice and then obviously into the summer.
With SMU leaving, obviously Tulane losing their head coach, UTSA losing their quarterback, like right now, again, there's still a transfer portal window that's going to come up and all this other stuff. But right now, would you say Memphis is the favorite in the conference? Where would you put Memphis?
Yeah, I think Tulane is the only team I would consider. Tulane brought in Ty Thompson, who's a former five-star quarterback from Oregon, and people have spoken really highly of John Summerall, obviously, who have been around here, knowing from what he did at Troy. So, and if you look at what they've done in the portal, I mean, very aggressive. Obviously, they lost a lot of players, but they've been very aggressive, and they brought a lot of guys with high pedigrees. So it's going to be tough. I'm going to go back and forth probably on those two teams going into the summer and going into the offseason, and we'll see, obviously, what happens with the spring portal window. But I think, from my perspective, you look at it, Tulane and Memphis are the two teams. Like you said, SMU's gone, UTSA. You know, we should expect them to do pretty well because they have a good track record, but without Frank Harris, you're definitely downgrading them. And there are some teams that I think will improve, but it looks to me like Memphis and Tulane are clearly in kind of that one tier going into next season.
I think you're right about that, but there are some teams, like you said, that are on the move with a good trajectory forward, positive. And that includes the likes of UAB and North Texas, and I think even USF. I would imagine under Tom Herman, Florida Atlantic's been able to get some players. I don't think there's easy outs. Certainly Memphis went through that last year with all those close calls. Charlotte has been able to spend a lot of money with NIL money. So I think it's going to be a little bit more competitive than people think. But in the end, it should be Memphis and Tulane battling if everything goes right.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Memphis has a – we've been over Memphis' tough schedule, and they have to go play on the road. Tough schedule relative to the league, I should say. You have to go play on the road. Like you said, USF – I think USF is going to – you could say they're going to be, you know, right up there as maybe the third or fourth team. We were expecting them to improve. They have a good quarterback. And, yeah, it's going to be exciting to see. I think when it comes down to it, like you said, we know that game is going to be on Thanksgiving. It's a big game. And fans, we kind of said this last season, but if we're going into that Thanksgiving game and Memphis is not in the mix for the conference title game, I think people are going to be disappointed, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with what we just laid out with where the conference is.
Man, you and I were talking yesterday at the tournament. Man, it's a long off season before you play real football. I hate that void. We will get some football UFL style with the showboats and, of course, what happens in spring. But that's a void for the football junkies out there, like the three of us. So hopefully time will go by quickly, and then before too long, we got the new college football season and the first 12-team playoff. And you never know. Memphis could end up being in the mix for that. Jonah will have you covered over at the Commercial Appeal. He is Jonah Dillon, covering the Tigers, the Grizzlies, and so much more at the CA. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at the Jonah Dillon. Thank you, Jonah.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
East Coast Wings and Grill was over there for a little bit on Saturday watching some of the NCAA tournament action. A lot of people were in there watching all the tournament action. They got all the games on the TVs in there, so you're not going to miss any game when you're in there at East Coast Wings and Grill. And while you're there, you could, of course, enjoy some great food and great drinks, like maybe any of their wings, which are 60 different flavors for you to choose from. So there's something for everybody in the wing flavor department. And they've got 7 different heat indexes, so however much spice you like, they've got that taken care of as well. Plus their flatbreads, their great burgers, all kinds of great sandwiches and salads and things on the menu beyond just the great wings at East Coast Wings and Grill. 24 draft beers on tap for you to enjoy a nice cold beer. You can do that as well, of course, at East Coast Wings and Grill. Located just off Highway 64. It's on Kate Hyde Boulevard. That's the one that runs right between Lowe's and Walmart off Highway 64 there in Bartlett. They are East Coast Wings and Grill.
All right, let's have some fun when we get back. The NBA All-Star Game is putrid right now. Adam Silver's not happy. He's looking at all options to make the game more competitive and attractive to fans. He has one suggestion I think is interesting. We will talk about that when we return and maybe get your thoughts as well on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines. That's next. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
We talk a lot about the NBA dunk contest, even though Mac McClung has been pretty awesome the last 2 years, it's not even close to what it used to be. And will it ever be again? Is there a way to encourage great dunkers like Ja Morant and company, Anthony Edwards, to compete? I don't know. But the All-Star game itself is pretty bad as well. I mean, this year, just a month ago, the All-Star game was horrendous. So Adam Silver, he's looking at all options to make it more competitive and attractive for fans, for viewers. And so while looking at different options, he's come up and suggested, or somebody suggested to him, how about USA versus international, almost like a Ryder Cup situation. Now, playing golf is playing golf. Playing basketball or something a lot more physical, albeit not football, is something that I don't know if anything will change the players' minds to want to play physical game with the chance to get hurt, although you can get hurt getting out of your car. But the competitiveness is gone, so would international versus Stars and Stripes make any difference to the players? What do you think? You don't think it'll make any difference to the players? Zach, do you think it'll make any difference to have pride for your country? Zach. All right.
You just have to accept the All-Star game for, like, it is what it is. Like, I don't think there's any change you're going to make guys play harder. Like, it's just not, like, it is what it is. And some people will watch it, other people won't. But, like, I just don't think there's a change you can make that's going to suddenly make guys go, all right, I have to win this game.
Okay. I don't know if they could ever get back to what it was. It used to be competitive. Guys used to want to play and win and play defense and, you know, play all-around games. That's not the case anymore. I don't know if switching to international versus USA would change any of that. But it's fun to think about the competition, taking this year's team or teams, which were East and West this time, but making it international versus the United States, assuming everybody is healthy with this year's NBA, assuming everybody's healthy from Ja Morant to whoever, internationally, let's go with I've heard where they think maybe they'll expand. I've always said expand the rosters to 15. 15 players for each. So international versus the United States. Zach, you got a pen? You got a piece of paper? I want you to keep up with these teams here. So let's go international first of all. Because right now the internationals are dominating. Look at the MVPs in recent years. Look at who's dominating right now. Not that there's not great American players as well. So if you look at an international team, and I know Joel Embiid has not only dual citizenship, he has citizenship with three countries, but he was born outside the United States, so he is an international player. So put Embiid down, put Giannis down, put Doncic down, put Jokic down. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a Canadian, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Victor Wembanyama, right? Right there off the bat. I mean, the internationals, I think, would dominate a game. That's six. But we got to add a bunch more. Your top Americans now, your top six Americans would be led by Jason Tatum. Right? Throw them out, anybody. Devin Booker.
Durant.
Steph Curry.
LeBron. Anthony Davis.
There's six right there. Six on six.
I mean, and if, as you're going, like, obviously LeBron, I mean, Curry would be out of that.
Phasing out,
In the near future, but.
What about Ja Morant? What about Zion Williamson? What about Tyrese Halliburton? What about Trae Young, Jaylen Brown? I mean, I still think there's still more to choose from. There's still more American basketball players in the NBA than there are internationals, but the internationals are closing the gap. But I think you understand my point. I think it would be incredibly competitive just rattling off those international players that I did and the Americans that we know. And there's a lot of other Europeans that you can use as rotation players, backup roles. But I think 15-15, so 30 players total, I think it's a step in the right direction. Now, whether or not they would be competitive and play harder, I don't know. Probably not. But I would not mind, unless they could come up with something else, to throw that concept in there for next year. What do you think, Zach?
I mean, I like the idea. We talk about this pretty much every 4 years with the Olympics, you know, the Americans versus the other countries. So it would make an interesting game, to say the least, because I can – say for like the last 10 years, like the international game has improved and they have been more stars coming overseas than it is in coming from the United States. So I think it could work. It's just, will the players buy in? That's always the biggest thing.
Right. I mean, there's pride when you play for your country in the Olympic Games. I would imagine in the Olympic Games coming up here in 2024 that the guys on the team are going to be playing hard. They're not going to be looking at it as, oh, I can't play hard, I might get injured. You know, those things happen. Injuries happen in any walk of life, any possible situation. Doesn't have to be on the court or on the field. But with an exhibition game like it is in the NBA with an All-Star game, I don't know if they buy into that us versus them attitude.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, just to add on, because I think just to add on to this, I mean, if you don't want to do USA versus the world, you can do a 3-on-3 tournament style. Like, you got 15 players on both sides, you might as well do 3-on-3, and then you just mix the talent up for 3-on-3. Have it like a bracket in a sense, I guess. First to, I don't know, 15, first to 10 or whatever, and then you just run it off of that.
Go big three on them.
It's not the worst idea, but again, you could sprain an ankle, rip an Achilles tendon playing 3-on-3 if you're playing hard. I just don't get why you don't play a little bit more defense in an All-Star game. Just play a little, try a little bit harder. But that's not a bad idea, but I like the concept of continuing the All-Star game, rewarding the players as you do. I think lengthening the bench from 12 to 15, because there's a lot of players that are worthy, and go international versus the USA. Make it a big thing. And even if you want to go North America versus the rest of the world, which would include the Canadian players, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would be on your team, your USA team, as opposed to international, or just leave it separate. I like it. I like that idea. I don't know if they're going to come up with a concept that's any better, that the players are going to want to compete at 100%. But right now, what we have is ridiculous. That was awful. I watched it and then turned it off. It was ridiculous. And you can say anything you want about the slam dunk. I still thought it was okay, even though they weren't big names with McClung doing what he did. But I'm not worried about that. That's just a throw-in. The All-Star game itself, I enjoyed for years watching the All-Star game, watching the competitiveness of it, watching the guys in their own uniforms, which I like. Bring that back, too. So you go either the whites of your home team.
Well, they're definitely not doing that. So.
I know, because they're trying to manufacture and sell and all that. But I loved it when those guys all had their own jerseys. And, again, it was either the dark or the lighter, the white or the away darks. But you wore your team's colors and jersey and logo. But, again, that's just window dressing. The game itself, it has become a big, hot mess. And I like the fact that Silver not only knows it and understands it, but is trying to do something about it. It's not that important in the scheme of things. You know, raising the awareness of the game internationally is just as important as anything, obviously, financially, to be beneficial for all their sponsors and their network partners. The game itself, the players putting their best foot forward as far as being in the public as role models and things of that nature, teachers of the game, ambassadors of the game. But the All-Star game is part of it as well. And I'm glad that Silver is actually looking at those possibilities.
He's been doing this for years. It's all wasted energy. Like, they went to the captains, and then now they've switched back to East versus West. Is that going to change? You're not going to get the guys to play hard
in
that game. You
are a Debbie Downer. You keep trying until you get it right, man. You keep trying.
They're not going to.
You've given up. You've thrown up your arms and saying, that's it. Then get rid of the All-Star game.
Again, dump it. They don't need to do that either, because people still watch it. Like, they had, like,
oh, those numbers were horrible.
They're like 6 million viewers. Like, that's still, not like.
Still, back in the day, I imagine.
And they have a bunch of sponsors for it. Like, they're not going to get rid of it. It still probably makes them money. Probably makes them a lot of money.
I wonder what the numbers, I'm guessing. I don't know this for a fact. But I wonder, in the heightened era of Jordan, Magic, and Bird, the NBA is a more popular sport overall now than it probably even was then. But it was still popular. I wonder what those numbers were for the All-Star game when those guys were competitive, as opposed to what they are now when it's a laugher. I just like the fact that he's doing that.
And you know what will be happening 10 years from now?
You think the same old crap?
He'll still be doing it. He'll still be trying to figure out an answer, because there is none.
Final score, East 327, the West 305. It was a nail biter down to the wire.
It might be that.
Throwing a 4-point shot. Why? They get the big three. Throwing a 4-point shot.
If you do international versus American, you're literally going to have teammates playing against each other. You think they're going to be out there to try and really play hard against the guy?
Well, they don't have to slug each other in the face.
But again, like, why would
you defend each other in practice?
Why would that make them play hard when you're still playing for nothing?
You play hard in practice. What's practice? Practice. We're not talking about games. We're talking about practice. And they play hard against each other in practice. I don't know. I just think, why did they do it for all the years? Why was it competitive for all those years? Is it just a different mindset of the athlete today? Too much money that they're making? When you know you can get hurt, anything they do, anything in the offseason that they do. I know some of the things where their contracts won't allow, the water skiing, skydiving, things of that nature, but probably not every contract has those stipulations in it.
Guys, when you're thinking about getting engaged and you're talking about where to get that perfect ring, one place you need to go. Don't buy anywhere until you've at least gone to check out the selection and everything that comes with the experience you get at Genesis Diamonds. Poplar Perkins Extended is where you'll find them. They've got all of the top designers when it comes to those rings, the ones that women want. The top 10 bridal designers out there, well, they've got them all at Genesis Diamonds, plus an amazing selection of diamonds at amazing prices. Direct importer pricing that you'll find on those diamonds. Natural diamonds, lab-grown diamonds, all different sizes. They've got top-quality designer rings for under $2,000. They've got something for every budget over at Genesis Diamonds, and they've got an unbelievable staff. They're non-commissioned salespeople, so they're not there to try and pressure you into buying the most expensive thing in the store. They're there to educate you, tell you what you're looking for, what's going to affect price, all of these things, all of the diamond to the ring itself, everything. They're just there to educate you and make you a smarter shopper when it comes to buying jewelry. So don't buy at other stores until you've at least gone by, checked out the selection, checked out everything you get when you have the experience of buying at Genesis Diamonds.
Is the NFL kickoff rule about to be overhauled? We will discuss that in our final segment. This is Sports 56
Mornings.
It's going
to be Americans versus world on the kickoff.
With Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everybody. So, it's a busy few days in Orlando for the NFL. Coaches, GMs, owners, other reps are gathered for the three-day annual league meeting. Or meetings, which started on Sunday. And the two main issues that they are going to eventually vote on is to overhaul the kickoff and prohibit the hip drop tackle. Now, it's interesting. The Players Association came out against prohibiting the hip drop tackle, although we know that it's the cause of a number of injuries. To me, though, I don't know if you're going to restrict defensive players another way. I mean, they can only do so much right now as it is. And I understand safety first, but pretty soon they're going to have like a little red spot on the uniform, and that's where you have to hit the player on offense for the defensive player. But the overhaul, the kickoff thing, seems like it makes a lot of sense because last year there was a record number of touchbacks. They want to have a kickoff, but the kickoff is the most brutal play in football, where the bulk of the injuries occur, at least the higher percentage of injuries. So the NFL Competition Committee, with input from league health and safety officials, has proposed this hybrid kickoff similar to the XFL, which they once used. So if it gets the votes, 24 votes is needed of the 32 teams, then it would go to the owners in May, and the owners would have a separate vote. And if they, and I'm not sure if they need a unanimous or not, then they would put this into play for the 24 season. But they're debating it right now.
Yeah, they had John Fossil, and then I think, I can't remember, there was one of the other special teams coordinators from the league that did the presentation yesterday. Basically, it's a touchback. If it goes into the end zone, anything in the end zone, out of the end zone, that would come out to the 30-yard line, which that was that originally 35, but then now apparently it would be the 30. And again, this thing, even as they have this vote, and I think they're supposed to vote today, there could still be tweaks to this. But basically, there's a landing zone. From the goal line to the 20 is a landing zone. Any kick that comes down in there has to be returned, basically. And so it's basically trying to encourage the kickers, instead of kicking it out of the end zone, because that's going to come out to the 30, kicking it into this landing zone anywhere from the goal line to the 20, then that creates a return. Any kick that doesn't get to the landing zone is basically is treated like a kick out of bounds, and the team would get it at the 40-yard line. There's still some discussion on whether to kick it from the 30, from the 35, I guess. Also discussion on where to put the return team, where to put the kicking team. You could go, some of it is about like the XFL thing. They can't move until the guy touches the ball, all of these things. So,
Did you like the XFL? Did you like that rule in the XFL?
I didn't watch a bunch of XFL. Like, I liked the USFL. Like, they just back the kick up. But I know the NFL's not going to do that. They kick off from the 20-yard line. You weren't getting touchbacks. You're getting a return on pretty much every kick. But they're getting way too good a field position. That's why I don't think the NFL would ever do that.
We've come a long way from the original XFL, where they not only encouraged it, we saw the opening ball put at, midfield, and the two guys went after each other and killed each other. The he-hate-me days. Things have changed. The competition committee, though, is proposing this hybrid kickoff on a one-year trial basis. Now, if you remember, before last season, the owners ratified a proposal on a one-year basis that spotted the ball at the 25-yard line on any fair catch of a kickoff inside the 25. That measure reduced the number of concussions on kickoffs by 60%, according to the NFL's injury data. But it also cut the portion of kickoffs that were returned to about 22%. So you're looking at safety, but why even do it if it's just not going to be returned? It's ridiculous. Not even have the kick, but only 22%.
This is crazy. In 2010, there were 416 touchbacks on kickoffs. This past season, there were 1,970.
Wow.
So close to five times as many. And again, this was 2000. We're not going back to 1980 or something like that. This was 2010. They weren't. That's crazy.
Now, here I see, and I'm not sure if you're updated or I'm updated. It says, under the proposal, the kicker would line up at his own 35. All other members of the kicking team would line up at the opponent's 40, 5 yards from blockers for the receiving team. At least seven members of the receiving team would line up at their own 35-yard line. At least two others would be required to be in the setup zone within 5 yards. The receiving team could have as many as two returners. The kickoff would be required to land, as you mentioned, between the goal line and the 20-yard line. So again, this is something they're talking about. They started yesterday. They'll debate it again today and tomorrow, and we'll see if it comes to a vote. If it does, has to be at least 24 favorable votes, and then it will go to the owners' meeting in May, and then it could be implemented if it is passed.
I think they're supposed to vote on it today.
They are, but then I read where it says it still has to go through an owner's approval in May.
No, I know, but I think the vote for is supposed to happen today. I think they're supposed to actually vote on it today.
Oh, no, I figured it was in the next, you know, whether it's today or tomorrow. But, yeah, and you're saying it's today, that's fine. But I knew it was during this 3 days that they're meeting in Orlando. Folks, at Chevy truck season, all the Silverados you want are in Olive Branch at All-Star Chevrolet. Come get any new Silverado you want with financing down to 0.09. That's 0.09 because your good credit deserves it. Trailblazers, Equinox, 1.9% financing and no payments for 90 days. The new Suburbans, just some of the great vehicles they have at All-Star Chevrolet with this amazing financing. Military, teachers, college students, healthcare workers, you get an extra $500 bonus when you purchase a vehicle from All-Star Chevrolet. And if you want pre-owned, everything you want is here. All the Jeeps, the Ram trucks, the Yukon Denalis, the Traverse with that third row seating. If it happens to not be there, ask Jeff or Kevin, any of the fine folks at All-Star Chevrolet, and they will work hard to find it for you. Remember, it's not South Haven, not Mount Moriah, not Bartlett or Collierville. It has to be Olive Branch, people. Go to All-Star Chevy today or go to allstarautogroup.com.
Looking at the NBA All-Star ratings, this what I'm looking at goes back to 1990. In the 90s, it was on NBC, so you were on network television. They did the biggest number, 1993, they had 22 million viewers. Like 91, they had 10 million viewers. I don't know what caused the wide variety of some of these, but generally they were in the teens, million-wise, in those days. Like 2001, they only had 7.7 million. Then when it went to TNT in 2003, numbers were 10 million, 8 million, 7 million, 6 million, 7 million, 6 million, 9 million, 7 million, 8 million, 7 million, kind of in that 7-8 range. Mm-hmm. Last year, 2023, it dropped down to 4.59 million. That's the least or smallest number. And then this past year, it came back up to 5.4, still the second fewest as far as viewers are concerned, but nearly a million more than the previous year. So, those numbers are down, but it's not like from what they've been doing the last 20 years, it's kind of, it is what it is.
Speaking of numbers, Saturday's NCAA tournament games averaged 10.8 million viewers across CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV, making it the most watched first day of the second round ever. That brought the tournament average through Saturday's games up to 9 million viewers. Not sure how Sunday fared.
Fleet Feet is the place to go to get all your running gear. You want to make sure you get shoes that are just right for you, and you can do that by going to see the folks at Fleet Feet, either one of their two locations, in the Laurelwood Shopping Center in East Memphis, out in Collierville, Poplar and Houston Levee, next to Huey's. You go in there, they take a look at the way you run and the way you walk, and they'll get you fitted in shoes that are just right for you, plus everything else you need for your running gear, whether it be socks or shorts or shirts or whatever. They've got all of that for you as well. And they do their group runs and other things. They sponsor a lot of races, 5Ks, and other things around town. You can always get involved with those, and if you want to talk to the folks out at either one of the locations, they'll keep you up to date with what they've got going on. But you can also get information on that online through their website, fleetfeetmemphis.com, or through their social media by following them at Fleet Feet. Again, two locations, Laurelwood Shopping Center in East Memphis and out at Collierville Poplar in Houston Levee. They are Fleet Feet.
And again, as we mentioned, the Grizzlies tonight in Denver, the injury list out lists Brandon Clark as doubtful. Yes, that's good news. Why? Because he's on the injury list, meaning he could be back as soon as Wednesday when the Grizzlies return to take on the Los Angeles Lakers. When the next injury list for the next game comes out, look for questionable. If you see questionable, more than likely, BC will be back for the Grizzlies. That'll do it for us today. I want to thank Jonah Dillon for joining us. Tomorrow, among our guests, Connor O'Gara. We'll talk some college football. It's always a good time to talk some college football. Jeff Crane from the University of Memphis will have Humdinger's Trivia and more for you tomorrow beginning at 7 a.m. Wolo and Friends on Sports 56 is coming up next. For Eli Savoy and for Zach Boyd, I'm Greg Gaston. Have a great Monday, everybody.